And you're very welcome, guys, to Sunday Business Post HQ. We're going to look ahead to events for 2019 that may affect financial markets, but it's always probably helpful to look back at what preceded the year. And towards the end of 2018, it was a bumpy time towards Christmas when we were all out partying and shopping and celebrating Christmas. Financial markets had a little bit of a dip.
Yeah, that's right, Ian. Towards the end of 2018, some of the US markets hit all-time highs and everything was trending up. All investors, portfolio managers were happy. And then towards end of October, start of November, we had a big pullback in the markets. And for the rest of the year then, especially in December, it was a extreme volatility returned. Most days were down days, but there were some spectacular up days. I think on St. Stephen's Day, the market was up 5.5% in the US. That's a phenomenal move, probably the biggest move ever. But it's likely to have been caused, or most likely to have been caused, by a lack of liquidity in the market. Most people are at home in bed and not trading. So those that were ended up paying significant premiums.
Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why people were a little bit fearful of the global economy, and that permeated into the start of this year, but people have got their expectations kind of reset about what's happening.
Yeah, indeed. There was the start of this year has been, you know, very, very positive, at least up until the last couple of days anyway. I think what we're really seeing is just general on one side, some optimism about the overall state of the global economies in terms of employment rates, in terms of growth and so on. But at the same time as well, I think we've got these geopolitical risks that are just refusing to go away at the moment, bringing a little bit of uncertainty in. And then on top of that as well, you probably have at the back of the mind as well, you know, we're into the 11th year of a bull market as well. There's probably a little bit of sentiment there that thinks, well, you know, it has to end maybe at some stage. And maybe you've got a bit of people that are just a little bit kind of cautious on that side.
I suppose one of the things that we're talking about this year is that instead of focusing on the economy, we're actually more focused on political events.
Yeah, that's right, Ian. And in reversal to James Carville in 1992, it's not the economy, stupid, it's politics. So the three main worries that we had in 2018 were Brexit, a trade war between US and China, and a weakening of the Franco-German axis in Europe. And they're the same issues again in 2019, certainly in the first half of the year.
Yeah, let's take us through a couple of those things. I mean, trade wars, it's been talked about, you know, China and the US, they'll have to come to some sort of an agreement. And if they did, that should really kind of kickstart the global economy again.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They're the number one, number two economies in the world. They want to deal. But they both want to deal in their own advantage. But as China is emerging more as a retail, consumer-led economy rather than export-led manufacturing economy, I think that they will arrive at a deal with the US. Donald Trump is unpredictable, but you know, he's a deal maker. Yeah, the art of the deal, it's him. So I do think we will see some resolution that in the first half of the year. And then from then on, the emerging markets around Asia and the US and China, I expect, will grow. Continue to grow at the rate that they've been growing.
Looking closer to home, and again, to keep on to that geopolitical thing, it is going to be elections. We're going to have to be political anoraks as opposed to financial nerds.
Yeah, I think probably in this context, politics is definitely now the new economics for now. We do have, obviously, the whole Brexit situation. And we've also seen, I suppose, concern about this rise of populism over the last number of, I suppose, year and a half, 2 years. People are beginning to ask questions of the, I suppose, the European project. But as Benoît Coeur said recently in an interview, he said these questions have always been here. Like every year, there's a reason to think that the European project will fail. From that point of view, I think that the outcome of the May European elections will probably tell quite a bit. Obviously, from a markets perspective, we'd like to see three of the main risks come to a conclusion in the coming months. So the whole Brexit issue to be settled, the settlement of the US-China trade wars as well. And then finally, to see an end of the kind of the surge in populism that seems to be on one side threatening the European project, put to bed as a result of the European elections. And I think if the three of those come favorably and play out throughout the year. I think that the fundamentals underlying the market are still very, very positive. And a successful resolution of these three main issues could really see, you know, an extended period of growth.
Yeah, and just on that topic, when you think of the sequencing of all of this, it is going to happen in a short period of time. We're sitting here in early March discussing Brexit. We don't know quite yet what can happen, but we are going to see lots of these things crystallize over the period of maybe the first couple of months. Next couple of months are going to have to see all these things get a resolution to it. Would we be in for a period of volatility over this time?
I think without doubt, yeah. So, I mean, from KBC Asset Management perspective, really what we've said in our latest strategy updates is that the risks haven't changed. It's just the deadlines have moved a little bit closer. And as we get deadlines kind of looming, we're going to get a bit more volatility. We're going to get a little bit more uncertainty. But certainly we'd like to see towards the end of March, early into April, we'd expect to see some kind of resolution to the US-China situation. We've obviously got next week a series of votes, 1A, 1B, 1C, it seems to be on the Brexit side. And then early May, we're going to see the European Parliament elections. So really not that long to go, but probably a little bit of uncertainty and a little bit of volatility in the meantime.
Something investors really should focus on is the economy. And it is, you know, again, discussing politics is what we've been doing a lot over the last number of months. But looking at the fundamental signs of the global economy and the European economy, how's it looking out there and what impact is it having on markets?
Yeah, on the global level, the US, we'd say, is in a very expansionary stage. You know, they're running GDP growth at 3.5%. Unemployment is extremely low in the US. This is, you know, it really is a golden period for US companies, although it probably doesn't feel like that. In China, they didn't hit their 7% growth target last year, but this year they've actually revised it down. You know, so instead of having a specific level, they have a range from 6 to 6.5%. This is a new development, and I expect that they will grow at that level, you know, for the foreseeable future, maybe the next decade. But 6 to 6.5% growth,
you wouldn't complain about it.
You wouldn't. No, it's still still amazing growth. But in Europe, unfortunately, Europe are the laggards. Recent European Commission figures and yesterday's ECB meeting, you know, set European growth at a Eurozone growth at approximately 1.1%. It's, you know, it is the laggard in the group.
I know if I was speaking to you guys a couple of months ago, I said, what would happen to European interest rates in 2019? You would have said, at some point this year, before Mario Draghi departs, he will raise interest rates. Would you? You wouldn't be betting on that now.
No, it does not look like we'll have a rate rise in 2019 from Europe. In fact, it'll most likely start in 2020. I did cast a look back at Mario Draghi's career in the ECB. So he joined in 2011. Initially, there were fears from Germany about, is this guy, you know, going to be a low rates guy? And so he actually, in his first few months in charge, he raised rates a couple of times. But since 2012, there's been no rate rises in Europe. So it's phenomenal that very unusual that he's gone through 7 years as a central banker without any rate rises.
Mm-hmm. And that, from an investor point of view, means that equities probably are the only game in town for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, without doubt. I suppose on the bond market side of things, it's very hard to see positive returns, at least into the near future. It's inevitable that we are going to have some interest rate rises into the future. Now, albeit that may have been kicked down the road until kind of early next year, but what's going to happen inevitably is the interest rates are going to have to come up, which is going to see the bond prices reduce as well. So for the majority of investors, the real growth or growth potential over the next 2 to 3 years is going to be in the equity side. And again, this is something that people who are considering investing need to bear in mind, that generally 60 to 70% of your overall return is determined by your initial asset allocation. So people who would have had a traditionally defensive approach are probably going to be struggling to achieve the type of norm returns that we saw in the past, at least into the next 2 to 3 years.
What have you guys done in terms of allocations? Because obviously with a return of volatility, you have to be a bit more mindful of where you put your money. So what have you guys done in the last few months, and where will you be shifting in the next couple of months?
I suppose we were looking ahead. We were looking at obviously the stubbornly slow growth on the European side. So in our last strategy implementation a couple of weeks back, what we did was we actually reduced our equity levels back to our neutral benchmark, just amid this kind of uncertainty that's continuing. As part of that as well, we've underweighted our European holdings. Again, I suppose that was our view was actually reinforced from the ECB meeting, where they reduced, as Neil said, the outlook for growth from 1.1% this year, slightly down next year to about 1.6%. So it seems to be that in the medium to long term, the European Central Bank at least are still kind of nailing their colours to the mast in terms of the underlying strength of the economy once these short term risks are kind of washed out. What we've done instead is we've overweighted our high dividend North American portfolio as well, because we really see that that's where the growth is going to go. Again, I suppose echoing what Neil said, that the American economy seems to be in pretty rude health at the moment.
Despite what a lot of people think about the US economy, it is doing. The jobless numbers are phenomenally low. If you look at first quarter earnings, it's been a really good time for many companies. Will that continue? Is it possible for it to continue the way it has been?
Well, I can't predict the future, Ian. But what I will say,
you wouldn't be here if you could.
Wouldn't be here. No, we'd be doing something else. I think that the US economy, though, will continue to grow. It is all the factors there for growth, the innovation, the low unemployment rates. Even their Fed has recently taken a pause in raising rates. So we do think that the US is definitely definitely the place for us to invest. So we're overweight the US, as Dara said. But we, as a company, as a house, our opinion would be that the US will continue to grow this year and next year, and we want to be in there with the growth.
Looking from, I suppose, an investor psyche point of view, when they see all of these headlines, do people start getting a little bit nervous? Do they panic? Oh my God, I must change my investment strategy overnight, even though they should be looking kind of the longer term horizon when they see all of the volatility and the noise out there?
Yeah, this has always been, I suppose, the single biggest challenge from an investor point of view. Obviously, there are those kind of chosen few who just seem to be able to stay the course, stick to the original plan. But for a lot of people, I suppose the emergence of volatility that we've seen over the last kind of 6 to 8 months or so in particular has been a pretty testing time. It's always very easy to sit down in the middle of a bull market where you've had kind of consistent rising returns over a period of time and make a decision that this is what I'm going to do, this is what I'm going to stick to. And then when you hit these periods of volatility and maybe you see the value of your investment, albeit temporarily, dip down, it seems to be that it requires quite a deal of courage to stick to the original plan. Our view is always you make a medium to long-term investment and you should really stay the course. We will always see an elevated return over a period of time with a good balanced investment. I suppose the people who really benefit are the people who can kind of switch off that emotional switch, let it do its thing, let the volatility ride out, and wait until we start recovering again.
Yeah, I'd echo what says there and agree with it. And just as an example, we talked earlier on about the volatility we saw in the market from October, November, December, 2018 and till now. If you went away in October and came back to the market now, markets are at the same level.
So was all that about?
What was all that about? So we would say, stay invested over the long term, invest towards your risk profile and your time horizon, and stay in the market. It's the best thing for investors to do, certainly to increase their purchasing power. Inflation will eat away at that with savings rates so low. But unfortunately, some investors, although they think long term, they act short term. So we'd say try and take the emotion out.
Yeah, because it has been, and you mentioned at the very start, guys, it has been a long period of time where equity markets have just been going up. I think it started early in 2009. So we are, 10 years into it. And people haven't had that type of, things do actually go down for a couple of weeks or a month or two.
Yeah, what we'd say 2007, 2008, markets fell off dramatically. 2008 was perhaps down 25, 30%. But the following year, markets were up 20%. Now, you didn't claw back all your losses in 2009. It probably took 3 or 4 years for investors in 2008 to claw back their losses. But there are definitely gains to be made. Markets aren't linear. It's not a linear upward trend. But in the long term, market return is positive, and the equity return in the long term is the most positive.
Is it helpful for people to be reminded that volatility can actually be a good thing?
Yeah, of course. I mean, volatility is always there. The extent to which it kind of emerges from time to time will change. But volatility has always been a part of investing. What we try and encourage people to see is ways that they can use volatility to their advantage while investing. And what we've seen some of the really smart investors do at the moment is that they use maybe a regular investing strategy as well as their lump sum to pick up some of the value that's created through this volatility. So you've invested your money for a long period of time, you hit a period of market volatility, maybe the NAV price drops of the fund that
you're in. Net asset value.
Yeah, indeed. And it's a really good time to actually go in, maybe on a monthly basis, and pick up some of that value. So it's effectively like saying, okay, well, you had a house that was valued at X. Now you've got a chance to buy that at a discounted rate for a period of time. So it would make sense. Why would you refuse a discount? And eventually you're going to end up in the same position, just with a little bit of extra value added.
One of the things I always try to focus people's minds on is, look, you know, a lot of what goes on and a lot of these things, there will be an end date to the Brexit outcome. There will be a time when, there will be a US economy and China will reach an agreement. What, though, are the moments that will either be a catalyst for markets to gain or for a more extended period of volatility? What should people be looking out for that's positive and maybe something that could be a negative for the year?
But certainly, you mentioned there, but certainly the end to the US-China trade war would be a positive for the markets. You know, we can move on and think about something else. The companies that are stalling their investment, they could invest in new products, new factories, and move on from there. So that would be the biggest block on the global level that we see at the moment.
And kind of risks that, you know, again, we talked about the geopolitical risk and economic risk, but something that perhaps is, you know, right now it doesn't seem to be on the horizon, but for a could have a potential impact. What do you think that might be this year?
Again, it's really hard to predict with any certainty. I think that the big unknown that's hanging over everybody is just how Brexit is going to go from a European point of view. That it's certainly not helping in terms of the overall European growth side of things. But I'd always urge a caveat as well that from a point of view of waiting for things to resolve, obviously it's going to send positive signals out to the market. But from an investor level, you have to be very aware that the markets can react far quicker than an individual investor. So on the day that the Chinese US trade war is resolved, the value is probably already gone. So it's very dangerous from an investor's point of view to sit back and try and time these markets correctly. The best result has been shown year after year after year to invest as soon as you can for as long as you can, rather than try and guess and time the market.
From a, you know, again, and just to go back to that point about, you know, we've had a long bull run. I think this is now perhaps the longest bull run we've had. I mean,
yeah,
everybody will want to know just how much longer can it go on?
Yeah. Well, I don't see it ending this year. Markets were generally flat, a little bit negative last year in equity markets. But I think this year, given how we've started, I think it'll continue again. Now, I could be
heavily
wrong.
Heavily caveated
could be wrong. But if there's a resolution to Brexit or a resolution to US-China trade wars, I think the market will continue to grow. Interest rates are relatively low. Inflation, unemployment are low. You know, there's very good things ahead to come in 2019, 2020.
And the word for investors out there is, don't panic, but don't make stupid or rash decisions.
Yeah, again, it's about trying not to be reactionary to short-term measures when you've invested from a long-term perspective. And yes, we're in the 11th year of a bull market. Will a bear market and a drawdown occur? Of course it will at some stage. But the other thing that people need to look at is the average time for a bear market. It turns to be very, very short-lived. 2008, 2009, it was financial Armageddon. People who stayed the course for 6 or 8 months were already seeing a rebound at that stage. So, you know, 11 years growth, 6 or 7 years of a bear market, another long-term growth period. It seems to me that you should stay the course. You'll be rewarded in the end as long as your investment strategy is good.
Yeah, I know people would always say tend to ignore the media headlines, but I would urge you not to do that. But gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you very much for coming into Sunday Business Post Towers. We'll talk to you very soon again, I'm sure. Thank you very much.